From in the beginning to the musical apocalypse, this is The Bible Says What. I'm your host, Mike Wiseman. Why does one choose a particular doctrine over another? How does one pick their magical, invisible best friend forever? Timing is crucial. Many come to religion when they are the most vulnerable. After a loss or during a hardship, many find themselves comforted by the mental act of putting all of their problems and worries onto someone else. Of course that feels good. That weight off your shoulders, that burden you are now putting onto your invisible father figure, gives a sense of relief. But it's just a placebo. The problems you have in your life, your financial issues, your health, your family, your job, all still exist in the real world. That feeling that comes with placing them at the feet of Jesus does not change that fact. Reality still must be dealt with. The church figured out a long time ago that the thoughts and beliefs of the young and impressionable are easier to control. Scare them into submission. Teach them to rely on an invisible father figure and to trust him without question. Swallow this pill and believe. Let's start the show.
Is there anything in the Bible that you yourself have an issue with? Okay, so it took you reading the Bible to realize that those things were bad for you?
Yeah, it actually did.
I didn't figure this out on your own?
No, Ted Bundy could be redeemed. God doesn't kill children.
What do you think the Passover was? Yahweh sets up a whole system in the Old Testament where you slaughter animals just so he's able to forgive you.
Hello.
Welcome back to the show, Pastor.
All right. Thank you. I hope that wasn't too much of a disruption.
No worries. Is it working out okay? Is everything cool? Sound good?
It sounds a little bit better. You went out once, but it sounds good so far.
Yeah, you're a little fuzzy. You're a little fuzzy, but it's okay. It's cool.
Hey, you know what?
You know what?
I am so sorry. I think I can fix it on my end. If for some reason the call drops, we'll get right back together. But I'm pretty sure this is going to fix it.
Cool.
All right, we should be good from here on out. I just noticed that my phone was on like a very weak internet signal, so I just turned the internet off on my phone, and so now we're working with the AT&T powerhouse satellite. So we're good, man.
Awesome. Good.
AT&T, pay me for that ad.
Yeah, I'm sure they're listening. Yep. All right. So, Pastor Joey Svensson, when you teach at your church, do you use the Bible?
Yeah, I do. It's a Christian church, and so the Bible is kind of the go-to Christian set of books. And so, yeah, I definitely incorporate the Bible pretty much every time if it's at a church gathering on a Sunday morning.
Awesome. What is the Bible to you?
The definition of the Bible for me has changed drastically in the last 5 years, and I don't have a seal-type definition at this point. I don't think I ever will, but I will take a stab at it. Like, I feel that the Bible is a collection of books that represent humanity's interaction with the Creator. Mm-hmm. And I believe that we can read that and see how God interacted with humanity sometimes. Uh-huh. But we also have to be careful because we don't understand the culture of that day. And so we got to be really careful not to make these assumptions, and also to recognize that some things in the Bible may have been figurative that you've always been reading literally. Like, it's so important to read it with an open hand. But I do feel like God, for some reason, has used the Bible in miraculous ways. I just don't need it to be a perfect document to do that, because in my opinion, once God chooses to work through humans to get his shit done, so to speak, I believe that you've signed yourself up to lose perfection. Like, oh, I'm going to choose humanity to write this. Okay, well, it can't be perfect. And yet everybody says, okay, well, God is the one that is perfect. And if he's the one speaking through those people, then everything on there is perfect. And it's just like, God hasn't really done that in any other thing. Why would he do that for this book? Like, he hasn't, although the Catholics claim, I'm totally fine with Catholicism. I'm not knocking Catholics, but although I know they have claimed in the past the Pope to be infallible, I don't know if they still do that or not. I don't agree with that either, but I don't feel like the Bible was intended to be used as an infallible document that oversees even Jesus. And here's the thing. If it is, we still have to be careful, because it's a tough document to understand and to read. So we got to be really, really careful, even if we do think it's perfect.
Interesting.
And I honestly think it would be more harmful. it has been in my life. So
how do you decipher which ones are to be taken literally and which ones are to be taken non-literally? You know, I mean, how do you decipher which ones?
Well, you're saying which ones. I don't know what that means.
Which part of the Bible, which stories, which ideas, which concepts, like the creation of earth. Do you take that one literally, or is that, just story, fiction?
Well, here's the thing: is any historian that is familiar with literature, even on a surface level, they know that the Genesis account is definitely in a poetic form. We also know that the Jewish culture back in that day, they actually read stories to convey truth, and they didn't need truth to be substantiated in the same way that we need it in 2019. I mean, we have moved through a scientific age in which we do things right. We gather the facts, we test things, and we make sure that it's right. And we can't tweet something unless we fact checked it, or we're going to be humiliated, or and all that stuff. And it's like, back then didn't work the same way.
Right.
So I don't care, honestly, whether or not Adam and Eve really happened. I understand what God is trying to get through with that. And I think it's pretty crazy that he's been able throughout, you know, the last few thousand years, get that same meaning across, which in my opinion, I call that the Holy Spirit, my friend.
So why did he have to go through the imperfect humans to get his story across? Why can't he just come down now and correct it? Why hasn't he just come down every decade and say, nope, you got it wrong. Here's start over again. This is what it is. Okay, 10 years later, well, you guys are kind of off track here. Let's correct it. This is where it is. Good. All right, I'll be back in 10 years. You know, why just thousands of years ago come down and do stuff, tell a few humans a few things, and then just kind of disappear and hope everybody gets it right, knowing that not everybody's going to get it right, you know?
Well, you're operating off of an assumption that God has, like, negative intentions for humanity. I would ask you, why would you assume that would be the best thing for God to come and fix things immediately right now? Now,
I think it would be better than not being there, though.
What's that?
I think it would be better than just not being there at all. You know, not coming down and correcting it, as opposed to coming down every 10 years and correcting things. I think that would be better and more beneficial to his
sure,
kids, his family, his, you know, creations.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is you're assuming that big picture wise throughout all eternity, if such a thing exists, you're assuming that this what you described is the best possible way of doing things, and that's a God that comes every single 10 years. That could be likened to a kid on December the 8th saying, you know, and again, you can poke holes all through this analogy, but hopefully the point will still be taken. But, you know, December 3rd and mom is punctual and she's got all the presents under the tree and little Johnny just can't stand the suspense and he just begs his mom, "Mom, please let us open presents early. Please, please, please." And in Johnny's mind, that just sounds like such a good idea. Like, let's just open it. Let's get it over and done with. I want to play with this stuff now. Not all personalities are like that, but his sure is. But what does his mom do? No way we're going to end things right here. Like, there's way too much that needs to happen between now and December the 25th. And I know it's going to be agonizing, and I know it's going to be super hard, and I know that your little self can't hardly contain the excitement, but please just trust me that I can't end everything right now. But my gosh, when Christmas morning comes, oh snap, like I'm going to be making it up to you big time. So that is a very optimistic faith that I have, because I simplistic. Really do feel that I have come into contact with a very, very loving God.
Very, very simplistic explanation of it. There's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of in-depthness missing to the whole. Do you believe in the eternal damnation?
Yep, I don't.
You don't. So what do you think happens? Like when we die, the good people go. The people who love Jesus go one way, and where do the people who don't? What happens there?
Yeah, well, I can go a few directions here. First of all, have believed for the vast majority of my life that the vast majority of humans suffer eternal damnation, being tortured forever and ever in flames, and that never, ever set well from a standpoint of I couldn't even put it off to the side and try to ignore it. Like, it wreaked havoc on a little adolescent boy going to high school thinking, fear. Man, the blood of all of my classmates are on my hands because I'm not sharing, you know, with them the gospel. So it, you know, the whole concept of hell is a big one for me, and I'll never forget. So this has all been probably in the last 6 years, but I bet you it was about 5 years ago. I listened to a podcast called Rethinking Hell, and it blew my mind that the host was actually an inerrantist, and he believed the Bible was infallible. And I'm telling you, if he did not kick butt up and down traditional views of hell in debates and showed clearly a better case for annihilationism as opposed to the traditional views. So what that means is, and I'm not necessarily saying this is what I believe, but what that means is God says, look, please choose me now. I want you to have me. Like, I don't want you to reject me. I am good. I know it doesn't seem like it sometimes, but I am good. So I'm asking you to come to me so that I can give you life and that you can actually live forever also, because that is conditional. Hmm. It's called conditional mortality. That it's conditional. Like, you will, when you die, whether it's a metaphorical big lake of fire that everybody's thrown in and all things are destroyed that we're not redeemed. I don't know how it works. I don't even know if that's true, but I will tell you that this guy made a slam dunk case for that being way more viable of a biblical option theologically than the traditional view of hell. It blew my mind. And so that opened the door for me to realize, my gosh, like, what else am I missing? Like, I've been studying this book since I was literally in elementary school, and something as major as this has just blown my world up. And I think it was right then when I started to realize, you know what? I have a system that is just so important to me, and because it offers security, and I need to really learn to know what trusting God is. And the only way for me to learn how to trust God and the real way of doing it is for me to start being honest about things that didn't seem right and to stop pretending like they weren't there and stop putting these theological band-aids on really horrible truths and just stop arguing for God. Like, If God has allowed himself to be presented in a certain way, then we don't need to be defending God or making that our case. Like, I truly believe that that's just not what he needs from us. And so I see God as, you know, when it comes to conditional mortality, I see him as being a being that wants to be with us forever. And maybe there's a possibility that there's just something, you know, in the metaphysical, spiritual, weird world. Now, I'm not a scientist, so I don't know the words that I even just said. But, like, is there something out there that free will has to be accessed and God has to be chosen for that person to be able to live forever? Like, is there some spiritual rule out there that God just made things that way, or it's just the natural rhythm of things? I would say that's probably, you know, probably not the case. But I certainly see conditional mortality as, you know, something that makes a whole lot of sense, because God is saying there's nothing in creation that is going to be left unredeemed. I don't believe in a traditional view of hell as far as the eternal damnation of many souls. First and foremost, because now it just makes zero sense. And I'm starting to realize just how little evidence there is in the Bible. So I'm basically what you would call, first of all, I hope every Christian is a hopeful universalist. Like, I hope every single one of us has our fingers crossed that, man, maybe we've got something wrong and God saves the day. And I'll be quite honest with you, I have read some great thinkers such as Brian McLaren and Richard Rohr. These are guys that are so honest in their approach to God's word. And they have come to conclusions of that very kind, that God is a universally loving God, and that there has been revelation of God throughout the years, and we've arrived at this place where we really do talk about God as loving and practical and created art and is beautiful and wants a relationship with us, but we just haven't moved beyond the conditional grace. Like, and they make a great case for just unconditional grace for every person who's ever walked the face of the earth. Do I embrace that? Like, I don't want to camp out on any of them right now. I want to actually give myself some time to not know, because I think that's a very, very good place to be, because, you know, that's when you really trust God. So I don't know what I think, but like I said, I hope all Christians are hopeful universalists. And I will tell you this. Here's what I do think is weird. I do think it's weird that if you have a God that he is all powerful, all loving, I mean, my gosh, all knowing, and he decides, okay, I am going to make all of this stuff, and I also know that what's ultimately going to happen is 80%, 85% or whatever of living beings that were ever on this earth, they are going to have to suffer an eternal torture chamber. But I'm still going to do this because I just think it's worth it. Well, you know what? It's okay to not be okay with that. Mm-hmm. Like, it is okay. And I feel like if the loving God that we described exists, and maybe let's just say he is like that, you know what? I think he's going to be pretty darn understanding that didn't make sense in our head. But I can't imagine a being taking such strides to build such an unbelievable world like this, where the details are just mind-boggling. The universe is so vast, and he just created this for there to be like a coin flipped with whether or not people are going to go to hell or not. Like, that's a weird thing to say. I mean, that's a weird thing to do. Like, nobody respects the little kid that goes outside and finds like a little burrow of kittens nursing with the mom, waits for the mom to go away, and then just, you know, picks one of them, says, I want this to be the pet, and I'm gonna kill the rest of them, you know, because they didn't follow me fast enough. I mean, Mm-hmm. Just, nobody would say, well, those kids did what they had to do, or there's stuff that we just don't understand. No, we'd say, no, that's bad. So I want to say this clearly.
Okay.
I don't think that I can figure everything out 100%. I really don't. So I am okay with God doing things that don't make sense to me. But I am okay with raising my hand boldly and saying, hey, this doesn't make sense to me. I'm being honest. And I'm even starting to think that maybe this isn't even the case. But at the very least, I'm saying this doesn't make sense to me. And that should be okay for a community of believers that's supposed to be treated the same way that Jesus treated people when he was on this earth.
I think the difference is if I don't understand something, I'm not going to just believe that it's true. You know what I mean? Say the flat earth the hypothesis or the bullshit that they believe in, that say that I know the earth is round, but this person is telling me that it's flat, so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to hope that they're right. I'm just going to believe that they're right. That's what it sounds like to me, you know?
Yeah.
So when I say I don't understand in something, I don't understand the flat earth theory. I'm definitely not going to believe it because I know the earth is round, because to me, when the earth is, that makes more sense than this flat earth theory right off the bat, without even having to dive into it. So
yeah,
the whole I don't know doesn't build faith or hope or truth for me. It builds doubt. And when you tell me that your God's a loving God, he wants to help us out, he's a good father, I don't see that. I see an invisible, mute guy in the sky who wrote a book through humans that were infallible and hasn't said anything since. I don't see that. You know, my I don't know what's up there turns into I'm not going to pick one. I'm just going to continue to say I don't know instead of just picking a deity that feels right or makes me feel good. You know what I mean? You said conditional morality. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, here's the interesting thing, too, is, I mean, and I'm sure this is where we're going to find ourselves in this conversation, is I don't blame you for that approach. Uh-huh. Like, I don't fault you for that. I don't think of you as a bad person. I don't think of you as an arrogant, prideful person that's just trying to suppress the truth so you can, like, do whatever you want with your life and not have to, like, yield to a God. Uh-huh. Like, I don't think any of that. But all I have to offer to you is the fact that when you said, and then God has stopped speaking, I couldn't disagree with you more. Huh. But here's the situation that we're in, is there is no example that I can give you in which you would be like, oh my gosh, Joey, you just won me over. That example that you just gave, now I really do.
Right.
I can't give you that. So all I can say is whatever I experienced, whatever I felt, it was good enough for dumb Joey to start believing that Jesus is who he says that he is.
I don't think you're dumb. Let's just get that out.
I know. I'm just saying, if it's a dumb thing, it's still, to me, whatever happened was significant enough to cause me to believe. And that, to me, reminds me of my favorite story in the Bible, probably my favorite thing that was even ever said, is that the Pharisees kept heckling a guy whose eyes had just been healed, and they were, you know, it was disturbing them that that had happened, and they were hoping that he was lying, and they were just trying to corner him and try to make him make a mistake or deny it or whatever. It seemed really weird, but they kept asking him over and over and over the same question, and he finally was just like, what do you want me to say? All I know is I used to be blind. This dude came by, said he was God, touched my eyes, and now I see. So what do you expect? You think I'm going to believe in this guy or not? And that's how I feel. So I am holding on the hope that the God that I was taught as a kid, the God that I now see the Bible doesn't really lend a whole lot of support for, but my hope is the Bible that I was taught as a little kid isn't the God that really exists. And guys like you had a purpose on this earth your whole life, to be this voice, to be the voice that you are right now, and to, you know, really show things from a different perspective. And, you know, you're helping people that maybe have walked away from religion and they feel bad about it. And you're a voice that's saying, no, you know what? There's some sensible things behind this. And I'm using my imagination, and I think that's okay to do. What if God has it all figured it out And like I said, I'm crossing my fingers that you're okay too. And God is just like, man, that was really some of that stuff that you were critical about. I wish more Christians were critical about that. Like, I wish more of them would have stopped and thought and had some more humbling conversations. Instead, they just butted right in and said, well, if science conflicts the Bible, then I'm going to pick science. And I don't know why I went country accent just now. I'm making fun of my own heritage. What's wrong with that? But I really do. I mean, it's just, you got me on a talkative day, my friend.
That's good. That's good. You said God still speaks. I'm very curious. Yeah. Is it a physical voice, or is it just like through showing you random things or coincidences? You know, what is it exactly?
Well, let me start by saying I don't care if anybody thinks that this is ridiculous, and it wouldn't offend me if you looked right at me and said, "Come on, you expect me to buy that?" You know what my answer would be to that question? Huh. No. I would say, no, I don't expect you to buy it. Now, if it's my wife, my feelings would be hurt for sure, but I still probably wouldn't lose any sleep over that either. But I feel if I can articulate it in any way, uh-huh. I would say it feels like God has been teaching me how to discern his voice amongst all the other chatter in my head, including myself. And I don't think I ever get it right. So you're never going to hear me say, God said this, and so I have to do this. I'm just not going to say it, because that is operating from the assumption that I have perfect, perfect ears mm-hmm. to hear perfectly from God. And I just think that's some dangerous ground right there, because what if you think God tells you to do something that's pretty whack or messed up or can cause somebody harm? So, yeah, I feel like over the years, there has been times in which I'm like, God, I really think this is you. And the stuff that I was processing definitely determined the decision that I needed to make. And I made that decision accordingly, and things worked really well. And I felt like there was a sense of peace in my spirit saying, yep, that was me. I want you to learn from this, like learn how this feels.
You just picked the right choice. You just picked the right
sure.
choice in that circumstance. Sure. And it made you feel good about doing the right thing, or picking the right choice, or going the right path, or making things, you know, beneficial to
yep.
you. I mean, that's, but that's not really speaking though. I mean, that's not really, that's just you discerning choices.
Yeah, but I mean, that you're assuming that it's always been like what I just articulated, like it's always mm-hmm. been that normal of a processing. I mean, there's been a time in which I was being trained at a restaurant, and I went in all excited about my new job, and I thought it was going to be cool and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the middle of training, and I'm telling you, if it wasn't as clear as day that I needed to stop that job, that I wasn't supposed to be doing it. And turns out that I was going to be a school teacher the following year. I had taught my first year and quit, and I was going to wait tables and play music and that sort of thing. But I ended up quitting that job. Having fun for the summer like teachers should once in a while. It's one perk of being a teacher. And so I had that perk, and then I went back for one, you know, a very fond year of teaching. And so I see that night as me minding my own business, going about my serving duties, learning how to input people's orders into a computer, and all of a sudden, boom, I'm not supposed to be here.
Huh.
Like, I'm not supposed to be here. And then I tried to fight it. Man, I'm crazy. I'm like a madman. Maybe I'm schizophrenic. I'm going to ignore this. And then it just became more and more troublesome, and it became more and more apparent. And then check this out, man. I know I sound crazy. That's cool.
Well, no, it's just strange that you attribute that to this specific deity. Like, you attribute that to Yahweh specifically, this God that's in a Bible that you don't believe is completely true, that a lot of it is hyperbole, is poetry, you know? And that's weird that you do that. I mean, what if it's my invisible magical dinosaur deity that's helping you out? How do you know it's not that? How do you know it's not any other thing? You've chosen this one specific deity. That's what the strange part is to me.
Well, I mean, you're probably going to hate how I'm answering these questions.
I love your answers, man. Don't worry.
I would return that by saying, isn't it a beautiful thing that
God may allow us to worship him in a way that is beautiful to us, in a way that really draws us closer with him because he knows us. I mean, I've got four kids.
I can turn that around and say the same thing about my dinosaur deity. It's the name. It's the specific deity himself. You knew this deity because you grew up with this deity. If you had grown up with any other god, you know, Zeus, for instance, if you grew up believing in Zeus was the right one, you know, and then you'd get away from the traditional Zeus beliefs and you'd believe something different. It's just, you've picked an invisible being. Why did you pick this invisible being? Because you grew up with him. That's what I see.
Yeah, that's fine. But I think the only problem is I would tell you flat out that I am worshiping a completely different expression of God now than I was 25 years ago. Hmm. And so where you see that as just like maybe my brain figuring things out and just evolving over time, eventually I'm not going to believe at all. I actually see God showing me a very healthy and maybe more accurate version of himself. Hmm. And I'll actually say for sure more accurate in this regard. Like, I am learning that the closer that I get to God, the more I need to trust him. And because the more I don't know, the closer I get to him, the light's just so bright. I know less and less, so I need to trust more. But it, here's the big difference. Here's the hole in my story. Hmm. If I did not sense like just such a level of peace.
It's a feeling.
Something that I can't describe to you. Yeah, but the feeling is enough for me.
Right,
so
right.
even if it's not true, you got to admit this is a good thing.
I mean, good feelings too. I feel pretty good. I don't have a deity though. I got a great family.
Yeah, but I'm just saying
house,
if this
job,
if this deity has brought me a whole lot of peace and direction and joy,
you
even
attribute
if it's
it to that deity. Yeah, I believe it yourself. That's my thing is I think you're the one that's giving this positive attitude to yourself, not this invisible magical man in the sky. It's you that's attributing these good feelings to this. But I mean, by all means, if you choose Yahweh, that's great. But you did mention him being a great father, and this is where I have one of the biggest issues. I cannot find out why anybody believes it to be a great father. It doesn't make any sense to me. I've read the book. I've learned the stories. I mean, do you believe the flood to be true? Do you believe the Passover to be true?
The simple answer is no.
Okay.
I actually think that, I've been reading a lot of heresy, but interestingly enough, a lot of these guys are starting to make their way in. They're infiltrating into the mainstream. Like I heard for sure that, and these are probably just names to you, but Andy Stanley is a big time mega church evangelical pastor, that has probably been pretty traditional in his beliefs. His dad is Charles Stanley, who's all over TV, but basically he's been hanging out with Pete Enns, who is regarded by many as someone who's leading a lot of people to hell. But I've been reading his stuff a lot. And he points to how similar a lot of different cultures and a lot of different religions overlap on a good bit of stories and share similar stuff. And he points out just how that is extremely congruent with how God has operated throughout time. and that is getting into our world to show us truth. And the climax of that obviously was, him sending Jesus and Jesus being one of us and actually tasting death. And that was the pinnacle of God showing, his mercy for all of us. So when I think about the flood, I just think that I will say this, a scholar at Seacoast, he works at Seacoast, the church that I go to, he does like a lot of the research for the sermons and everything. He did tell me, he said, historically in the Bible, history doesn't start until Abraham. So that's when real history can start being traced back. So that means Noah, Adam and Eve, the Nephilim, Tower of Babel, and all of that stuff. You could make a huge case to say it's a coin toss with whether or not it really happened. But then when you look at the actual content of the story, I think it's human nature to, at that point, lean a little more towards it being figurative. So I don't believe the flood account happened in the way that it was written to be perceived. I think there very well could have been a huge flood, and I think different people probably interpreted it in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that story teaches a beautiful thing, and that is that if there is such thing as an eternal soul, and God has control over the eternal soul, if you see the flood and the destruction of wicked people as representing just how wicked people are and just how wicked sin is and just how messed up we all are, like we all share blame in all of this, like if we could really, really grapple with that, if we could really, really grapple with that, like I think that our eyes would be open to just more of, and I've lost my train of thought.
That's okay. It's okay. I recommend James Frazer. James Frazer wrote a book called Folklore in the Old Testament, an amazing book that really puts all of those stories together with the other stories from other religions, and it's a really big book, but it's really awesome. He also wrote another one called The Golden Bough, I believe it was. Really good stuff in there. You mentioned the flood being beautiful. I cannot, in the slightest amount.
That was where my train of thought.
Okay.
Was like, So I can't
imagine that being beautiful though. That's just a genocide. All those animals, all those babies, all those mothers, it's just kids drowned because you know. Everything's evil. I cannot see that. We can agree that that's probably just a story anyways, so that's okay. So you still think he's a good father even after Jesus?
Well, real quick, can you hear me?
Uh-huh.
I mean, with the flood depiction, I really do want to wrap that up.
Absolutely.
That was where I lost my train of thought, is if you think of it in this realm, like, all of us would look at the world as super, super, super messed up. People aren't getting along. People are getting killed. Kids are getting messed with. Mm-hmm. Women are being abused. People of other race. I mean, it's just hurricanes, tornadoes, just all of that stuff is going on. And if you look at the pre-flood, maybe as allegorical as where we are right now, and then you see that God could possibly, through that pain and through that agony and all of that, could possibly redeem everything back. And again, let's put on our imagination hats. What if everything is redeemed? Well, for everything to be redeemed, we have to recognize what we were being redeemed from. So in no way do I think all of that death and destruction is a good, beautiful thing, and I don't think God does either. But just like this earth that we're living in is not the best possible place that God could create, it could possibly be the best possible means of getting to the best possible place for humans, in that maybe we had to grapple with free will and we had to screw everything up, and then we had to see the kindness and goodness of God. And then potentially, what if we all end up seeing God face to face and we bow? It actually says we're going to bow down and confess Jesus is Lord. Well, how about that, man? That's pretty cool.
No, like, that's terrible. What if we all, I don't want to bow God down to anybody. I don't need to bow down before
God.
Anything. That's ridiculous.
Oh, but if he's so good and you feel so safe and at peace.
That's creepy, God. Man. That's just creepy. Come on.
I don't think so at all.
Oh, man. Yeah,
The thought of having something to worship that is a legitimate something to worship is such an awesome thought.
Why do you want to worship something?
Why not? If there's something that exists that is more praiseworthy than any other thing, how could that not be a good thing if it exists? So that's the thing, is I'm totally fine with people saying, yeah, I don't believe it exists. Okay, that's a legitimate belief. I'm saying
I do believe, and man, does it feel nice to know that there's something meaningful outside of all of this stuff and this being that I can trust. Huh. Holy cow. Yes, that's good stuff.
I just can't get the whole worship thing. It just doesn't make any sense to me, bowing down to something and, I don't know, praising something, especially Yahweh. I mean, let's go back to Jesus. Why would he need to send Jesus to die? Why do you think Jesus had to die?
Real quick about bowing, though. Uh-huh. I mean, you're a smart guy. You know how, like, a physical contortion of our body is so subjective. I mean,
right.
If we're submissive. I hate the whole analogy of, oh, you celebrate at a football game, but you can't celebrate at church. But I will use the football analogy that when I'm excited about Clemson scoring a touchdown, like, I actually physically exercise. Like, I'm actually doing a workout. I'm jumping up and down. I'm burning calories. Well, that's a subjective action. Like, what
right.
is
that's subjective, not
just
submissive.
More customary of all of us to kneel down on the ground when Clemson scores a touchdown?
Well, that's,
you know,
submissive, so though. That's a submissive move. That's bowing down. That's submitting to this person, and it's just such a weird act to me to completely submit to somebody in that way, in that fashion. I've never felt the need to do that.
If you look at it this way. A baby does not have any choice in the matter. The baby a newborn baby has to submit, doesn't even realize they have to submit. They have to submit so bad. And so they're in a situation in which they don't have any choice. Now think of the chasm between that parent and that kid and the huge measure of understanding that the parent has in comparison to the kid. It's vast. I mean, they're just on different planets. Well, I believe that God and humanity are even on more extreme planets. So, of course, there is some sort of disconnect and a misunderstanding once in a while.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So why did Jesus have to die? Why did God have to create this whole planet that was flawed and need bloodshed in order to forgive humanity? If that's, I don't know if that's what you believe, but why do you think Jesus had to die?
Well, I believe one of two things. I believe that maybe there is some immovable principle, like I say, like scientific, spiritual, maybe there's this immovable principle that is needed in order for us to be with God forever. Maybe there's a sacrifice that's needed for us to be able to be purified because we can't be in the presence of God. That is one, and that's one I'm okay with if God really does exist.
So
but
God
I'm starting
needs,
to see
what you're thinking. What you're saying is he needs the blood to renew us. Is that what you're saying?
Well, if you think about it being the blood of actually God, that doesn't sound too crazy to me.
Well,
like,
right off the bat,
if you have
a little gross. Why does he need blood? Why can't he snap his fingers? Why can't he just do it that way? I mean, why does we need bloodshed? Right. Why do we need magical something to happen? I mean, he's an all-powerful being, right?
Okay. Well, in full defense and full disclosure for myself too, like I think all the points that you're making are very valid, and I think this should be on the table of discussion, and we may, I definitely think we should reevaluate and maybe buckle back down on this issue, because I do think some of the things that the objections that you're bringing up are good, and once again, I have read some people way smarter than me and way more honest than me as a student of God's word who have seen things, you know, definitely in a more universalistic light.
So you don't know. So you don't know? Are you
I don't know which part are you asking me now?
So you don't know if he needs the bloodshed? Is that what you're saying? Is it you're not really sure?
I'm just what I'm saying is I don't know if that, like, the theory that you are being combative against, I don't really need that theory. Like, I don't need that to be true.
Okay.
My faith doesn't crumble based on that.
No,
so
yeah.
it's a worthy discussion to have, but like, I definitely respect what you're trying to do as far as, like, just reveal, hey, these inconsistencies in this faith, they're too great to ignore. I understand
right.
What you're trying to do, but well, I just basically
Basically, I'm not here to attack at all. I'm basically here to try to understand why you believe in or how you believe it and why you believe it. Because to me, none of this really it doesn't add up. And you throw in a lot of hope and just feelings and stuff like that. And there's a lot of inconsistencies, and there's a lot of things that don't make sense, especially with the loving deity and then Jesus needing to die and he has to have blood and then the flood, and then I'm not seeing where the love is coming from. You're telling me he's perfect, he's unconditionally loving, but where is it? Is it just because he made us? Is it because he wants to spend time with us? That's where the love is coming from. I'm a little lost.
Well, I mean, there's so many angles of this, but mm-hmm. Let's just start here.
Okay.
I don't know what your favorite food is, but when you've eaten it, it's pretty daggum good. Now, again, I don't mind someone saying, well, yeah, evolution, that's fine. I don't care. Like, I don't care. But I will say, if a God is true, mm-hmm. and he made us to have the ability to do that, whether he was guiding evolution or whether he just did it, I'm totally cool with him guiding evolution.
Okay.
And that is a very loving God to not only take the time to make sure our tongues can taste really good stuff, but also that we get to have sex and sexuality as a part of our life. The fact that we get to experience love and community and failure and wins. And I mean, there's just so much of the life experience that I think you could probably see just how good living would be if it wasn't for the death and decay. And so that's what I'm saying is, I think there will be a time when death and decay is gone and everything is fine. So that's why I see a God as very loving.
What's
but
he waiting
one
for?
One thing
though?
That I would, one thing that I would also say, as far as your perspective of love is, again, I think the Bible is a collection of stories of people that are basically seeking God, figuring out God, getting God right, getting God wrong, thinking God did something that maybe he didn't. Like, I just don't understand why we're supposed to trust for sure that everything they're writing in the Bible is right. So I think over time, there's a very good chance that we have been understanding God's love more and more and more. And I'll take a New Testament story for you, Sapphira and Ananias. Like, so basically, these two apparently said, hey, we're giving you all of our money, because that's what us Christians are doing nowadays. We're putting all of our money in there. We're not keeping any for ourselves, so there's no needs. Well, they were lying. They actually did keep some money. And the Acts writer said that they were both struck down by God. Now, I think that there's a possibility that God struck them down, and if so, that's kind of weird, and I don't understand it.
Right.
But I think there's even a greater chance that Ananias and Sapphira ate something that poisoned their body. Like, what, I mean, that can happen today. It doesn't happen often, but salmonella poisoning or something.
Uh-huh.
And I think that culture back then, they saw everything as a result of God's hand. If it rains, that was God. If a cat gets hit by a car, that was God. That cat must have been mischievous or something. I mean, everything. Something happens, God does it. Something happens, God does it. And God, that's just not how God works. And so I think that our understanding is more and more. So I think there was a good chance that Ananias and Sapphira, they just got really sick. And then they found out that they were keeping money, and they're like, that's what happened. They told us they gave us all the money. They were lying. God struck them down, and maybe they're wrong. Now, and a lot of Christians would be super, super uncomfortable with that. And I used to would have been 5 years ago too. Mm-hmm. But I guess the big question I'm asking you is, what if Christians have got it all wrong about God? What if we have? What if we've got it wrong?
Right. What if the Hindus get it right?
Okay.
You know?
But my hope is that the one that created all of this, and the one that I am in communion with, which is through the lenses of my upbringing and recognizing things that were wrong and recognizing things that were right, but then clarifying over time more and more what the voice of God is. I mean, I really do believe that God is the one that is communing with me. So, you know, that it's not my job to figure out whether or not a Hindu is communing with God. It's not my job to decide whether or not the same God that is showing me truth through Jesus's words can't show that person truth through whatever words they're reading. Hmm. So it's just none of my business. And I have found lately too, that I have just focused so much time on stressing out what other people think about God. And that's one thing I have no control over, and I can't worry about it. And what I mean by that is, you know, if somebody that I respect, you know, is not a Christian anymore, and that stresses me out, or if someone figures something out in science that maybe makes my head scratch a little bit, and I'm like, oh, you know, maybe God, is it true? Like, I don't need that ammunition.
Hmm. So just to wrap it up, what parts do you think, can you give me examples of love from Yahweh besides creation? That's really not such a loving act altogether. It's just an act.
Besides creation, imagine how preposterous your question is if things are as I believe them to be. I believe them to be. So I believe that the universe came about by an eternal God. I can understand why somebody wouldn't, but I do believe that. So that means that that God has been around forever and ever and ever and ever. Mm-hmm. That means maybe there's a possibility that that God knew me forever and ever and had me in mind forever and ever. And if that's true, then all of a sudden, Barbara Svensson back in 1977 gives birth to Joseph Svensson. It's basically like the snap of a finger, not even the snap of a finger, but it's for such a short span of time, given how long the universe has existed. And then 79 years later, I'm out like that. 79 years to humans is like a super long time, but it's literally like the snap of a finger. And then I'm back. Good to go with a loving father. So forever. And then I see what life is all about. And then I get to, you know, explore the universe and learn more about science and get closer and closer with the people that I love. And so
the loving,
that's my perspective.
The loving act is the eternity with him. That's the loving act to you.
Sure.
Okay. So
for sure,
an eternity with Yahweh. Is the love that you see is why do we have to go through all of this? Why not just spend an eternity with Yahweh if that's the loving act and if that's the end goal?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're definitely going to hear me say, I don't know a lot.
Yeah.
So I would start by saying, I don't know,
okay,
but I think there could possibly be something to do with the free will mechanism, because I can understand that maybe we lose something throughout all eternity if we never really had a choice but to worship God.
That wouldn't be much of a perfect place.
That
takes away the perfectionness of it. It wouldn't be a perfect place if you can't do this there, or if you need to do this first before you get there. It wouldn't be much of a perfect place. You should be able to just, you're in a perfect place, everything's perfect. It's called a perfect place, you know? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And eternity is a long time. So you've got this deity that's there for eternity thinking about you and everybody else, apparently, and then decides, you know, now is the time I'm going to make the planet, that little blue one. And then I'm going to make the rest of the universe, which they're not going to be able to see until after they're dead and come live with me forever. Why would he decide all of a sudden, now's the time to do it? Why would he decide to do it at all? I mean, why does he need people?
Yeah. Okay, so I don't mind answering those questions. Maybe like, jot them down so we can go back to them. But
yeah.
I really do feel like simultaneously, if you're going to ask these questions, then simultaneously I need to be asking you, like, dude, what's your explanation of how all of this came about? And if your honest answer, is I don't know, there's not enough evidence, and mine is, well, I think I have a hunch because I do think I've seen some evidence. Well, then you can call me a dummy and get on with your life. Like seriously. So I don't understand, like the line of your questioning is like, well, I'm the crazy one, but I actually am, and I'm not mad, by the way, okay, at all. If my tone sounds that way, I'm not at all. So, like, if
good.
Like, I don't understand how me choosing to believe a certain set of beliefs over another one, make me the one that's kind of metaphorically backed up into a corner, because there, bottom line is, there has to be something crazy that happened. It has to be. Either there was an eternal universe, and you and I both know how weird that
right.
is, or there was an eternal personal being. That's pretty weird, and I can't understand how that could be. Like, how can somebody be uncreated? Mm. Or literally everything came from nothing, and I'm okay with camping out on that's impossible. So the only two possibilities I can see is an eternal universe or an eternal God. Both of those sound crazy. Mm. So we've started the conversation, and we're already in crazy land. Like, we're talking about something that you and I can't even come close to knowing, and it is all theory. But then I'm the one that's crazy. Well, that's crazy, dog. That's crazy, man.
What it all boils down to is, I guess, you've picked something and I haven't. I guess that's what it all boils down to. Well, this has been fun,
but,
Joey.
But I'm hoping you're okay.
I'm great.
There's some mean Christians out there that want you to pay the price. I'm hoping you're okay.
Yeah, there's some hellfire out there, that's for sure. Oh, man, I appreciate your time today, Joey, and your answers, man. I really do.
Yeah, man, it was fun talking to you. Had a blast. Let me know when it comes up.
Absolutely, dude. I'll keep in contact. Thank you so much.
All right, man. We'll see you. All right.
That's all the podcast there is for you today. Thanks for listening. It's not just about the questions I ask. It's about the pastor's response. How are they going to respond to my line of questioning? How will they choose to defend their faith? I may be the host of the show, but these pastors are the stars of the show. Their answers aren't scripted or prepared. They're all different and unique. Like a stained glass window, these religious leaders come together to make a nice picture, but in the end, it's just a brittle and transparent belief structure. If you enjoyed the show, or if this podcast has helped you in any way, please let us know by giving us a rating and or comment. And if you really enjoyed the show, then stop by bswthepodcast.com and become a patron of the show for as little as $1 an episode. Patrons will get access to patron-only content such as bloopers and unaired clips. As always, you can find us at the Bible Says What Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube pages. Please send all of your comments, questions, or guest suggestions to bswthepodcast@gmail.com. And whether you listen to us on iTunes, Android, or YouTube, don't forget to push that subscribe button so you won't miss out on the next episode. Until then, would you kindly pick up your Bibles and read them?